What matters to you?
How are you going to work differently?
Are you having great conversations?
How can we support you to work differently?
It's all about people.
It's all about people.
It's all about people.
Hi, you're listening to the It's All About People podcast with me, Matt Evans. I'm back because we've had enough of other people in the chair stealing my microphone, so they've let me. I've got rid of them. I'm back on. And today I'm joined by Alison Wilkinson, Nicola Bussey and Gemma Wright, who we're going to talk about the Grantham Aches and Pains Hub that we delivered recently. So without further ado, I'll bring them in because I can see them all giggling on the screen, dying to have a pop at me live on. Nick, I can see you first. Do you want to just introduce yourself?
Oh, yeah. I'm Nicola. I'm a physiotherapist. I work for UNHT and I've been working with Matthew for a year now. Keeps dragging it out a bit longer. I'm trying to leave, but...
Yeah. Thank you. And Alison, do you want to go next?
I will. I'm the other half of Nick, really. I work for UNHT as well at Lincoln. And for the last year, worked with Matt as well and keep trying to leave. And he keeps dragging us back along.
Yeah, keep you hanging on. And the pair of you have been working on some shared decision making and working for the personalisation team. So like one day a week for a year now, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right.
Cool. And Gemma, let's come to you. Do you want to introduce yourself, Gemma?
Yeah, hi, I'm Gemma Wright. I'm the personalised care lead for K2PCN, which is the primary care network that sort of has a sort of governing body over the GP practices in Grantham and Sleaford. I was introduced to Matt when they started discussing the event.
Yep. Well, we'll get to the event in a minute. Yeah, we'll drag you in as well. There seems to be a lot of Matt dragging people here. I don't like the sound of it. But what we're going to talk about today is about collaboration, working together. Different ways of working, thinking differently about how we offer some MSK support, certainly with the hip and knee pathway development that's been going on. So if anyone's listening thinking, what is this about? Yes, this is for people that get on well, and so we should be able to have a good laugh with it. But it's about how we've worked to support that that development from, oh, my knee hurts for a patient in Grantham area, in this example, right the way through to what's going on with surgery. And we put this event in the middle of it to try and, well, it's a support mechanism, wasn't it? So let's see. Who remembers how this conversation started? Go on, Nick. What were you going to say then?
What, the actual idea for the aches and pains?
Yeah.
Formerly known as the Health Village.
Go on.
Formerly known as... I can't think what it was called, but you sort of connected up with somebody in Dorset, didn't you? Tale of Two Counties.
Yeah, well done. Yeah, oh, you've even plugged my other podcast. Thank you. So we had a bit of an idea around the Dorset model, didn't we, and what outpatients were in Dorset, and we shared that. And then, Gemma, how did K2 get involved? Can you remember?
My boss, Darren, had actually said, you might want to get involved in this, Gemma. It might be something that we would benefit from, I think was the first thought of it. And obviously being in the area and covering all the practices. And I think it was when you sort of started talking about more specific cohorts that I thought you might need a little bit of helping hand.
Yeah, too right. Yes, we did. And I think it's safe to say, like, without you guys being involved in this, I think you've got the individual, this is where I'm going to try and charm you now for nice comments on the podcast, but I think what you guys brought was that kind of individual sort of can-do attitude and positivity around, hang on, there might be something different we can go with here. But what we'll do in a minute, we'll talk about some of those things we were worried about before we actually got to actually the event. And as Nick's alluded to, we'd never really knew what to call it, did we? I think it was a patient experience group, wasn't it, Ali? I think, was it patient panel? Go on, what do they call them? Patient panel group, thank you. Yeah, when they actually said, just call it aches and pains because that's what it is. Simple, really. But anyway, we'll talk about some of the things that kind of were on our mind and maybe we were worried about before actually doing it. And then we can talk a little bit about the actual day and then what's happened since and where we might go in the future with it. But I think for anyone listening, it's important to kind of point out that this was the personalization team coordinating an event and asking partners to think differently about what they normally do anyway. And can we do that, but do it in a different space at the same time as others? So for example, if anyone's seen the video, then I'm obviously repeating things, but we had FCP, we had the bit of primary care, we had the health checks, we had the outpatients, physio, type appointment, and we had the prehab sessions, and we identified these were all touch points where personalized approaches could be put in. But all these things happened in isolation, and people were passed from one to another, and people told us through co-production that that was the most frustrating bit, that they get passed around. So could we have it so all those things happened in the same place at the same time? And it was the Grantham Mears Leisure Centre, and because they said, yeah, we get it. If you're here, it guarantees people that would benefit from our services and advertise our products to them directly. So putting it all in the same place at the same time gave us this health village, which, yeah, makes a few people's toes go. Not a health village, yeah, because people just didn't like that name, did they? They didn't like that idea. But
I got quite used to it. And then
the working title.
Yeah, and then I couldn't get used to the new name. And it really bothered me at first that we didn't have MSK, musculoskeletal, in the title. I felt like it needed that. But in the end, I changed my mind and decided.
Why do you think it needed it?
I don't know. I was like, to me, Aches and Pains Hub just didn't. It oversimplified. It could be anything, couldn't be? It could be absolutely anything. You could stub your toe and that's an ache or a pain. Mm. You know, it's not necessarily what I would consider as a physio, a musculoskeletal condition.
Yeah. But we didn't have any stub toes.
No, we didn't. And you were right. And actually, I think it made it more open, didn't it, to people? I think a lot of the public won't know what MSK is.
Mm. Or care what those letters mean. To them, they're just in pain. They've just got an ache or a pain.
Yeah.
Do you think, Nick, do you think there's something there for people that are working within the health system where almost, sort of going for a simpler name, simplifying things, almost could be seen to be devaluing the high skills that you guys have got as clinicians? Do you think there's a little bit?
I think there probably is a bit of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not
suggesting your ego, Nick, but you know what I mean?
You better not put that in.
I'm not. I'll cut it out. I'm not cutting that out. No, but I just mean that whole piece around, because working with you all, the complexity of it all, like when we talked in the prep for the event, the worry about what conditions could come in, and you know, there's some real serious things there that you guys are absolutely brilliant at dealing with when you're on the ward or in the normal space, and the idea about some of that coming into that space with that. Caused quite a bit of anxiety, didn't it? I know, Ali, we had chats about that, didn't we?
Yeah, the fact that nobody would have been screened for anything if they were just walking in off the street and could potentially have, I don't know, some serious pathology behind it is what do we do if we get that on the day with those people? But we didn't really get any of that at all.
No, we didn't. And do you think that's because of the name? Do you think the name actually, maybe somebody with something more serious thought, actually, this is about aches and pains, so it maybe helped to bring it, I don't want to say down a level because that's like demeaning, but you know, it didn't need the highly skilled, highly like real specific clinical stuff because we were able to dumb it down just with the name aches and pains.
Yeah, and also I think we're very used to as physios we're used to speaking to each other in a certain way when we're communicating about musculoskeletal problems, and we don't speak to each other in that patient language. We try to with patients, but it's very easy to get sucked into using medical terminology, and so that's where co-production and you being not a clinician, it'd been really valuable input to say,
I'm leaving that bit in.
It's fine to say aches and pains. That doesn't mean it's making it less. I don't know what the word is.
No.
You said dumbing it down, but I don't mean that.
No, I know. I think we will have to do an episode for the podcast around language, because language comes up every single time when we're talking about how we deal with people, how we deal with each other. I mean, you've touched there on that kind of like corporate versus clinical world colliding a little bit. You know, there is something about language. So let's not spend too long on that. Let's move on from that. But Gemma, I'm keen to ask you around the naming of it, because you and I went for a little walk around Grantham, didn't we?
Yeah.
Just tell that little story.
God, I can't remember it. We were trying to look at where we could advertise and ended up going in Chemist. We went to a couple of mobility shops looking at places which would be relevant, that would maybe have people going in that aren't accessing the GP practice, or wouldn't be aware of this event if not. And actually somewhere like that was really relevant, again, with the GP practice as well.
I think going into, because you kind of chuckled, didn't you, when I said, I remember being stood outside on the street going, I'm going to put some flyers in here, and you kind of going, oh yeah, okay. Yeah. And I guess that kind of, for me, that moment going in there and speaking to that chap, I mean, had I given him a flyer that said musculoskeletal conditions and NHS, yeah, really kind of heavy NHS brand, I think he'd have gone, no thanks, mate, that's not for my customers. It's all a bit too serious maybe, or too strong. But the aches and pains hub type approach really, really softened it, I felt.
I think with the setting as well, with it being at the Mears Leisure Centre, I mean, some of the feedback was it wasn't clinical. It wasn't like going to a hospital. And maybe that had been people's thoughts on it when choosing to go as well, to say, actually, this is an open event. It maybe would have reduced people if they'd got something like a new onset of severe pain. They maybe wouldn't have thought of going there to discuss that. That would have been like a GP option or hospital option. But people with existing pain on waiting lists, that, yeah, I think it was kind of, oh, this event's been put on for us to be able to attend and get something out of it.
Yeah, that would fit with a lot of the people we spoke to. Is a lot of them knew what was wrong with them. They just didn't know what to do about it or where to seek help for it.
Yeah, we definitely had people that came in that said things like, I can remember a couple of blokes that said, I'm only here because my wife told me to come. And she's sick of hearing me moaning about this ache, so I've come. But I think we got a split, didn't we? About sort of 50-50 between booked appointments and walk-ins. And obviously the walk-ins had reacted well to the I think it was it social media campaign that you guys had done, Gemma?
Yeah. So sort of K2.
Yeah, so K2 social media campaign, getting a message out to people that are already engaged with the practice. But yet we did hear people saying things like, I didn't want to bother the GP with this. I didn't want to phone up, or maybe felt a little bit like they couldn't get through as well, you know, because of how busy the GP world is. So contacting the surgery, they felt wasn't an option. But then walking into this environment, easy to do. So maybe there is something, Nick, around trying to make things easier and bring it down a level that has opened the doors and encouraged people in. Let's move forward to then the actual day. So, Alison, you just touched then around how busy you were. What was it like for you as a clinician in that noisy sports hall with 150 people around you?
I think both me and Nicola were absolutely shocked as to how many people wanted to come and talk to us. And they were happy to wait. They were queuing up at one point to speak to us. And it was really humbling for me as a physio to think that actually we do a really important job and people want to come and see us and want our help. It's just like, say, getting to us sometimes is a bit more tricky and navigating the system, but we were just bonkers crazy with people wanting some advice, and most people had an idea of what was wrong with them or had tried a few things but just really wanted some general advice rather than a full-blown assessment as to, you know, where to go next, what would help, and what we could offer really from a physio perspective. But yeah, we were very, very, very crazy busy, and I've never seen anything quite like it.
That's probably a really good point, isn't it, that you've never seen anything like it, because where else would you have physio there available to you that you haven't been seen a GP, referred from one service, referred on to you, waited to be seen at the hospital, that actually it was a completely different appointment for them or a visit for them to be able to say, yeah, you can go and chat to a physio.
Yeah, and they chose to do that rather than the conversation was happening through another clinician being referred. They decided that that was something they wanted to do, which was lovely for us as clinicians to go, people want physio.
Yeah, people do quite like that. They do seem to like that informal chat, and they still get something out of it, even though we think, oh, what are we going to really be able to communicate to them in 5 minutes when we don't not assess them and we're not 100% sure what's going on? But, you know, I go and stand on the football sidelines watching my kids play football every Sunday. And, you know, every single weekend, parents coming up to me asking me about their back or their ankle. And, you know, I'm frequently giving that informal just advice without assessing them, and they go off quite happy and they'll try a few things. So it's just bringing that kind of mentality to a different setting.
Yeah, and it clearly worked. There's a couple of things you've said there that jumped out for me. How often do we have primary care and secondary care and community providers all in the same space at the same time. Because I know colleagues at One New Lincolnshire sort of shared it was great for them that they didn't have to sell their programmes and what they were about, because most people that went to talk to them had either spoken to somebody from K2 PCN and Gemma's team, or they'd spoken to Alice and Nicola or one of the pain physios and had been sort of told, oh, you should speak to One New about weight loss, or you should speak to them about physical activity. So it almost meant they saved time because they didn't have to explain the benefits, yeah, because you guys already done that. And then they could just get people signing up. And sure enough, they got loads. I think they had about 40 conversations, and I think it's something like 18 signups to activities that were all there in that time. Anyway, there's something there. Is there anything, Gemma, goes on where you get primary care and secondary care often in the same room?
I think they probably do, but not involving patients as well. I mean, we have lots of networking events. We have things that, you know, community events are put on for people to know what's going on in the community. But I think with it being specific for patients, participants, I think that was the difference with it. And I think that we had the right people there. We could have extended, couldn't we? We could have had loads of different more services, but actually the ones there were relevant, and it kind of flowed well with the people that were coming.
I was going to say that I think early chats, we were a little bit anxious. I was definitely anxious, thinking we could have all these partners working together and nobody turn up, and that would be rubbish. So I was really keen that we made sure we had booked appointments in it, which I know caused you a few problems, Gemma, because you ended up being the person on the phone booking these people in, didn't you?
I did. I got to know lots of the people that came, actually, which was probably really nice. Again, it's that personalised care. That when we decided how we were going to do the booking, it wasn't ideal, but it did mean contacting each of the patients that we'd sort of identified. But it did mean that we could explain what was going on for the day. We could give them a bit of a rundown, what the expectation of theirs was, also to gain a bit of sort of knowledge from them about why they were coming. So actually when they arrived, they'd already sort of had that chat. And then to be booked into the sort of the 10-minute wellbeing appointment really worked, because it just meant that they were having that personalised care, that they were having sort of specific time spent on them. And we did the What Matters to You conversation, and so the PAM scoring. I think it just meant that they felt quite special by it, really.
Yeah, I think for anyone who's just thinking, oh, 10 minutes, you did all that, it just to add to it, it was, they were booked in, so they were definitely coming. We'd identified those people using a population health management approach. So we'd done some real good filtering on the data to try and make sure we got the right people from the right areas with the right conditions that we could make sure the offer would be something that would suit them. And then after that, that health and wellbeing check with you, your colleague Joe was leading some tables with the patient activation measure approach, wasn't she, to help signpost people. I know some of the colleagues that were doing the signing in had people coming in that were like, yep, I just want to speak to a physio, and off they went, highly activated. They knew what they wanted before they got there. But there were some that were quite overwhelmed by this new space, weren't they, and kind of going, oh, this is noisy, it's busy, and just being able to sit and have a cup of tea and just warm up to the environment and then have a chat with Joe and get a bit of a direction around what might help them. And yeah, for them, it might have been one or two things, whereas those that were high flyers could get around it all. That I just don't want anyone to listen and think 10 minutes we did all that. We didn't, did we? We had 10 minutes when we did the health and wellbeing check with you guys.
Well, I was going to say, I think one chap actually said that he'd been there for 4 hours and didn't realise how informative it would be, what was going on, and he spent most of the day there. So from the 10-minute chat, and like same with the sort of being with One U, we did blood pressures, BMI, height, weight, had that chat with them, you know, what matters to you, what are you here for? And it might have been that they were coming with knee pain, but actually the BMI proved that they were BMI over 30, so they could get an exercise or weight loss referral. The impact of waiting for a knee operation may have been that they needed benefits, or they weren't able to work. They might have been looking at Blue Badge, so it was kind of like the bigger picture to that pain that they actually came with, that we sort of targeted on the day, I think.
Absolutely. And then on the other side, we also made sure we had bookings for the prehab, which is normally a classroom based session, and we asked them to lift that out of the classroom and put it in the sports hall with all these other activities going on. So that guaranteed us, I'm coming to Ali and Nick now, that guaranteed us kind of 20 people, we thought, but actually it was nearer 30 by the time they'd come, and they brought people with them. And because the classroom space was bigger, they were able to have more people than they were expecting, probably just tagging along and listening to some of that information, weren't they?
Yeah, I think they were a lot busier than they were expecting to be. And there were lots of people who brought other people with them also listening to that, and various people who maybe had an arthritic knee but went and listened anyway and thought, well, that might be me in the future, or it might not be, but I'm going to find a bit more about that. If it's something that's been mentioned, because for lots of the people we spoke to, they maybe have an arthritic knee and they've been told something like, well, it's, you're not ready yet, but you're going to need it in 5 years. And, you know, some people will sit and wait that 5 years. Some people need to know a little bit more about it and think, well, it might never be for me, or maybe I don't need to wait that long, depending on how I'm managing. But went and found something about it, see, well, is this something I ever want to think about? Or no, I'm not nowhere near this yet.
And promote a bit of choice and a bit of thinking around being prepared to make that decision of, yes, I'm going to go for it, or no, I'm not going to go for it just yet, which obviously comes back to that shared decision making work that you two have been doing. And I think in the interest of balance, we should say as well, like, trying to deliver that workshop was a bit of a challenge for the two ladies on that, wasn't it? Because it was so noisy and echoey because it was a sports hall.
Really noisy. I think we were all just quite shocked how many people turned up and how noisy it was and how busy it was, because I think Nick and I had gone well prepared with lots of resources, thinking, well, we might be stood here and have an odd person come over and talk to us. But it just showed how much people wanted something like that, to just be able to go and talk about those aches and pains, and not just, you know, one condition at a time. So I had a couple of conversations with people. I was like, well, tell me about all of you, rather than, I suppose we're getting very much into the habit, if you're here for one thing, don't tell me about anything else. But that's not talking about that person. And so I had conversations with people who had maybe a problem at their wrist, but also, oh, and I've also got a bad back, or I've also got a bad knee, what else can I do, to look, talk about everything, rather than just, well, you're only here for your elbow, or you're only here for your knee.
And, you know, we think it's over 150 people that come through the door, and I would guess a good 90% of them probably all spoke to either one of you two, or if they're in the queue, and I was doing my queue busting, going back to my supermarket working days, moving people into other queues. I think we probably saw 130, 140 people had a conversation with a physio at varying different lengths at some point in that four-hour session, which are quite good numbers, really, aren't they, compared to what you would, you know, normally have that assessment booked and that dedicated time. So, yeah, a lighter touch, definitely. But anyway, just on that assessment, Nick, I know we spoke a bit about sort of that kind of formal assessment anxiety before it. How on earth do we do that? And do we need to do that? And Ali, I'll come to you next as well, around the passport. So Nick, just kick us off with a little bit around that formal assessment and some of the thoughts you had on that.
Yeah, so beforehand, me and Alison were both quite worried about this, because the tradition, you know, it's not just the traditional way of doing it, is the way of doing outpatient physiotherapy, is you do a formal assessment. It's quite specific questioning that we do at the start. It'll always be followed by a physical examination before you then come up with a working diagnosis and come up with a management plan together. And you know, our professional standards dictate that we have to meet certain criteria on our kind of note taking, and obviously and also be able to show that we've screened out anything that might be more serious pathologies or whatever. So this concept was really, we were struggling with it to begin with, weren't we, Ali? Beforehand, thinking, oh, we don't want to miss anything, and where do we stand from a legal perspective if we're giving advice to patients when we haven't documented anything? But then on the day, once we sort of let go of that expectation that we weren't going to be documenting things, and this was going to be delivered in a completely different way to the traditional assessment approach, I loved it. Absolutely loved it. It kind of liberates you from that. You can, with the best will in the world, when we are assessing people, we lead it to a certain extent, because we have certain things we want to ask them. We've got a pro forma to use, and all the boxes on that form need to be written in. It was completely patient driven. They could speak to us about anything they wanted to speak to us about, and we could just respond.
Yeah.
It just flipped it. It flipped it.
Sounds
completely
lovely, doesn't it?
And it was great, wasn't it, Ali?
Yeah, I think it's the fact that they wanted to be there rather than they'd been sent there was the big difference for me, is they've chosen what they wanted to get out of it before they go. And when they got there, rather than, than being referred by somebody for something. It was completely the other way around, which changed the conversation entirely because we didn't know what they were coming for. Whereas when you've had a referral, you know what they're coming for. You've got an idea of what they're coming for. So that's already in your mind leading how your assessment might go. But actually, we had no idea what any of these people wanted conversations about or what they wanted to get out of it. So it's like, well, just tell me what you want, you know, what do you want help with? And some of that was navigating the system. Some of that was knowing about their condition or where to get help from or what to do. And nobody seemed to be bothered about having a conversation in the open public, did they? We're all quite happy to chat about anything and everything. They were just happy to just have a conversation.
Go on, Gemma.
No. So do you think that's because the people that were there, obviously from the report that we did, it was a specific cohort of the ones that were invited to come, that they had a sort of a certain awareness of what they were coming for, and that actually that they'd taken responsibility for their own self-care. I think that's what we were sort of getting at. But I suppose that's it, that they've chosen to come. And actually, though, they knew why they were coming. They knew what they sort of wanted to get out of it. So that was probably quite a positive spin on it, to say, actually, we've come, we'd like to talk to you about this. We know what the condition is, or we know what we've been diagnosed with. And it was just then for some advice, sort of once everybody known.
Yeah, and I think it goes without saying, doesn't it, Liz, I'm speaking for you now, but had you have heard anything that caused real alarm or you thought needed a full assessment, you two are well placed. Well, not just you two, but everybody in that space was well placed to be able to go, right, this needs a full assessment. This needs doing... I was going to say properly then, but what was the word you said?
Thoroughly.
Traditionally. Thoroughly. That's
thoroughly.
The word. Yeah.
Thoroughly.
And there were patients, there were people there that we said, actually, you'd really benefit from having, you know, a course of treatment, or you might actually need to go and have an assessment. And we sent some of the people over to the FCPs to say, is there an FCP in your practice? What do you know? I think it would be a good idea if you got booked in and had this, you know, had a good look at you, because we weren't able to do that on the day. But there were lots of people we did that, but I would say there was more that we didn't, and that we didn't need to, because they knew they had a bit of a diagnosis. They didn't really know what that diagnosis necessarily meant, or, you know, I've got arthritis, there's nothing much can be done. There was a lot of arthritis on the day, and we were like actually sort of debunking a few myths, I think, about arthritis and what can help and what can't help.
But also,
rather than if nothing can be done.
When we see people individually for a full assessment, we tend to get really detailed, and we often want to really pin it down as to what the very specific issue is. And you don't necessarily need to do that for everybody who's got a musculoskeletal pain, because general advice and general exercise is probably still going to be beneficial, even if we're not getting uber specific about, oh, it's this tendon or it's this muscle. Okay, you've got back pain. It's likely that this type of exercise or this type of activity would help you. So it's just, and the other thing is as well, you know, they do always say, don't they, if you give a person 2 minutes to tell, in that first 2 minutes, if you just let them speak, they will tell you near enough everything you need to know. But when we get people coming to us, because we're under a time frame and we've got certain things we need to get through, it's very easy for us to start interrupting and leading it ourselves the way we want that conversation to go, so that we can get the information we need. This just, you know, they came over, they talked to us and pretty much told us what we needed to be able to then advise them.
Yeah. And some of the advice you gave, like say, there's onward signposting. And I think a little bit like the one you example, when you were sending them to speak to the FCP, I think some people didn't really understand that there was an FCP in their surgery. You know, if they're ringing the GP, they're going to bother the GP, and it's only a pain in my knee. I don't really want to bother the GP about that. But you actually was able to debunk that, using your phrase again. But you were able to kind of tell them, no, there's somebody there that can help in the primary care setting. And then if it needs a referral, obviously on it goes. But you were also able to give out some literature as well, wasn't you? And was it the gardening one, did you say, that went flying off the shelves?
So we had a lot of the Versus Arthritis booklets and exercise leaflets and things, as well as some physio bits and pieces. Gardening and arthritis was very popular. I don't know if we've got any of those ones left, and we ordered an awful lot for the day. But the booklets were really popular, and it just made me realise that we can put whatever we want online. Having something that you can go through and just, so this bit might be really relevant for you, or there's some exercise in the back of this, just having something to take away and to look at and refer back to, people still want.
Who would have thought out of all those booklets, the gardening one would have been the most. But do you know what? I was a podcast novice before I met Matt. And since I met you, Matt, I've started listening on my runs to podcasts all the time. And the other day, I listened to a podcast about where they talk about the blue zones. Have you heard of the blue zones of the world? The healthiest places in the world where the population, people reach 100 and over.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And really interesting podcasts about actually exercise levels are lower in these areas and they're just generally more active in their day and they all have gardens. And then the reason that they stay fit and active is because they garden like into their 80s and 90s.
Yeah, we can't go down this route because we ain't got enough minutes for the podcast, but I could spend hours talking about it. That is the old job. That's the old podcast. Yeah. We'll come back to that, Nick. I promise. We'll definitely come
Okay.
But I kind of mentioned the passport a little bit as well. And the reason I was mentioning that, and Ali, I'll come to you, because we were worried, weren't we, about what information people get. And we'd heard through co-production loads of times around, oh, there's loads of stuff out there, or there's loads of questions we've got, and there's like colleagues saying, well, we've got answers to all that. We've got all these resources. You mentioned the versatile right stuff. But everybody knowing what's right for them and where to find it, it's almost like it's overwhelming because there's too much information out there, perhaps.
Yeah.
And go on, the passport. Let's talk about the passport.
The passport. So we spent bits of time, probably not as much as we should because we were too busy chatting as opposed to writing, but navigating, like, this is where you might find helpful and jotting some of those places with good resources in. So before we went, we made sure we had a good look at what was out there, which we're all going to use now, future onwards anyway, but lots of writing down of where you might find this helpful or you might find this helpful, but giving them some options as well rather than going just going to look at this, and where to find and who to see, really, so they had something to take away and use after the event, right? Because you won't remember everything you're told, lots of scribbling of, you spoke to a physio today and, you know, this is what you might find helpful, or, you know, we actually recommend that you go and see your GP, or you go and see an FCP, or you, you refer you on to one you and go over there. But we wrote that down, so they had a little pathway of what to do.
And the passport, for anyone listening, it's just a sheet of A4 folded in half. And we were working on that sort of inside page, wasn't we, and filling bits in there. And Gemma, we'd use that, hadn't we, to try and capture people's story, so that as people move around the space, they didn't have to keep repeating it. People could read it. Colleagues could read it, certainly. And for you guys, when we looked at some of the feedback from that, we actually found that people were, they were declaring more than one ailment, weren't they? More than one body part that they were, whereas a traditional GP appointment, they might have to talk about their knee. I think it was something like two body parts on average per person, something like that.
I think so. I think with it as well, I suppose, how many times do we hear people say, you know, I went to the hospital, I didn't quite understand, or I didn't catch everything that was said to me. I think with giving them that, it allowed them to write stuff down, once they got home, to sort of reflect on it a little bit with sort of information on there. But yeah, it did help on the day for them to kind of tell their story once. They could write down what they sort of wanted to get out of the day, and then just show each of the services that they went to, again, helped everyone, didn't it? It was easier. Mm.
And through the passport, we put the PAM scoring in there, didn't we, so that we could, we had the question separate and people could answer the questions, and then after the event we've done the signposting, the tailoring live, but actually after the event we've processed those, and we found that actually people that came were from lower activation levels than perhaps what we might have anticipated. What do you think, you know, with the cohort that came, and we'll be able to track them through population health management data in the future, but that cohort that come in, you know, being disengaged or traditionally overwhelmed by services, what do you think about them coming into that space, Gemma, and seeing all that going on?
I think it was specialised. I suppose that's what was the main thing for them. It was specialised. It was targeted at them. You know, we made that initial contact with them to say, you know, you've been identified with a need, and these are the people that we think can support you, can give you advice, can give you information, and actually, ultimately, sort of make real positive changes to their lives.
I'm fishing for that kind of, this was really proactive, wasn't it? This was about you as a primary care network going, right, this group of people will really benefit, and then we got the services to match, and we documented it through the passport, And there are all these bits and pieces of this massive puzzle out there, but, you know, we didn't get them all. Obviously, I think we had about 15, 16 providers to do something like that on the day.
Yeah.
But actually, there's something around colleagues knowing what else is out there and colleagues being able to network and join up. And although this is recording, I can see Nick's face. Go on, Nick, say it now.
What?
Put it in. You didn't get time to network, did you? Because you were so busy.
Well, that you said it. That's true.
Yeah, but and I appreciate that was like almost kind of frustrating for you on the day because it's almost a missed opportunity. The flip side being you saw best part 150 people between you, but that kind of sense of everyone being in it together from a workforce point of view, that must have been quite powerful for you all, was it?
It did feel nice to know that whatever came up, you felt like you there was somebody there. We couldn't help them. There was somebody else there that we could go to with that person to get them some sort of support that they needed. So we didn't have to have all the answers for them.
We didn't have all the answers. That is a nice feeling, nice line, isn't it?
Yeah, because I think when somebody comes to you as a physio, you feel like you've got, you know, you're there to fix them or they expect you to fix them. Mm. But it's not always... you know, that's not always as simple as that. It's, you know, there's other things that are needed to get that person on the right path. So having everybody there in one room, it was, you know.
Empowering.
Empowering.
Yeah. And you often refer people on to these other services, but you don't really know what happens a lot of the time. Mm. You don't know how long they wait for that. You don't know what they get. You don't. And so having everybody in one room was quite nice because you could send them to the pain team and they could go speak to them straight away.
Exactly.
And
then
they didn't have to tell you where I went if they wanted to. It was everyone was gathering the little bits and we're all singing from the same hymn sheet and wrapping it around that one person as opposed to sending them off in this, that and the other direction with varying time scales and nobody really talking to each other about it. So it was like a big multidisciplinary team.
Yeah. Huge multidisciplinary team in one space at one time. And I think for some people, when they go to the hospital, they kind of go, oh, the physio couldn't help me. That's quite demoralising. That might not be the case, but that might be how the person feels in that moment. And actually, as you've just said there, all three of you, you know, I can't help you this, but just come over here because this person can. Not only does it speed it up, but it's kind of, it's less demoralising for that person to leave, get back in the car, or pay for my parking, or come out of work and they can't help me. All that's kind of undone because here's something that can help. And
exactly,
I guess that must keep people moving. Sorry, Gemma, you were going to jump in then and I cut you off, didn't I?
I think we gave people kind of options and choices when they didn't realise there was anything else kind of out there. If it was somebody maybe waiting for a knee operation, that was it. They're on a waiting list. But with inviting them along, we got them, they could speak to Connect Health. Was there other ways that they could manage their pain while they were waiting? It might have been looking at weight loss. And actually, ideally, the impact of that, they could have been on a 12-week gym program, they could have been on a Slim and Well program, that could have actually benefited them while they're on the waiting list. Ultimately, it may sort of help them, they might not have to have that operation.
That's what a lot of the people at the co-production have said. It's that limbo period of while you're waiting for something, what can you do? What can you do to benefit and help yourself while you're waiting for a date that you don't even know when it's going to be yet? Is what can you do to improve things? And that's what fits in very nice with what you just said, those limbo periods.
I had quite a young woman that came with a mum, and she'd got quite a complex sort of history and was in very, very low activity levels, quite high levels of pain. And when she started talking to me at first, my heart sank because I thought, what am I going to really be able to do for them 5 minutes now? This is not a straightforward situation. But what I realised was what she was asking was she wanted to know about hydrotherapy. And it just so happened that the Grantham physios who Grantham have got having a hydro pool were there and had a quick chat with them, and they only offer a certain amount of sessions. And then I thought, oh, there's Good Boost, which I thought I wouldn't have thought of originally because it wasn't really on my radar until recently. When I started chatting to the girl about Good Boost, she was like, perfect, that's exactly the sort of thing I'm looking for. So I took her over to Good Boost, she got signed up. And I think if she'd have come to physio, I would have taken on the responsibility to try and get her better through giving her things to do, when actually she knew what she needed. She wanted some water-based exercise.
Mm. Yes.
Oh, Nicola, I think that's one of my ladies that I support through social prescribing.
Oh, is it?
So, yeah, so she was invited because she's one of our participants. I'm sure it is because she's followed up from that as well. So, yeah, that's quite nice to know that, yeah.
It's really nice to talk to you all, and obviously we're really positive about it. We clearly enjoyed, I wouldn't say everything about it, but there were some barriers along the way, weren't there, which we've kind of alluded to a little bit. But the sense of achievement we've all got in delivering it, I think we're obviously buzzing off it. Was it perfect? Absolutely not. Was there things that we can learn from? Definitely. Will we do it again? Question for the group.
Yeah,
that's
a big question.
I don't think we've got a choice not to.
Gemma wants to. Nick?
I think it needs to be done again. I don't think you can ever sort of see something as a one-off. It's not, you're not going to change the world, are you, with just one event? But if we can roll it out and learn from it and improve it, it's got a lot of mileage, I think.
Ali?
Oh, definitely. I think something you've just mentioned a minute ago, Nick, about someone coming with their mum. It was actually an environment where people came in little groups together, maybe supporting each other, whereas I don't think on a one-to-one physio appointment you would necessarily do that. I mean, people sometimes bring a friend or sometimes bring their partner, but actually we saw a lot of people together and they were often asking about themselves, not just that one person. It was, they all came together to help themselves together. So when else could you do that at an event like this? So yes, definitely.
And carers.
Yeah, carers. Yeah,
I mean, there was well, quite a few people who are carers who they hadn't come for themselves, and obviously they're prioritising the person that they're looking after. But actually, they got quite a bit out of the day themselves just through listening to
what's available.
I
think we've got Rock Research doing some digging into it to look as an independent evaluation on it, so we can share that with our listeners and anybody that visits the website, www.itsallaboutpeople.info, a shameless plug there for the website again. But we can share some of that research and what people are saying and find out about it and how we move it forward. And over the next few months, we've got a few presentations to make and just to challenge back to people and go, is this the best way of working? Is the learning we can take from this? So that's what we'll do. And we'll take this positivity from you guys definitely with us. So thanks for that. I'm going to wrap us up there, but just before I finish, one word answer, please. Was this as bad as you three thought? Nick, I've been trying to get you to a podcast for ages. Was it bad?
Average.
Dramatic pause. Alison?
No.
No. Good answer. And Gemma?
No.
No, not as bad as you thought. Well, thank you ever so much for joining us. And I hope we get to do it again sometime. And the project was great, and thank you all. It wouldn't have happened had it not been, well, there's plenty of partners involved, but you three and what you individually did to really help me and the project and everybody working together was really, really, really important. So thank you from everybody that came. So that's it for this time. I will be back again with another one. We've got some great guests lined up for the next few weeks. We'll be dipping into more personalised care world stuff. So keep an eye on the website and follow through Alexa or Google or wherever you normally get your podcasts from. Thank you for listening. Bye. Do you all want to say bye?
Bye.
Bye. Bye.